Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I'm Dave Johnson, joined by Jason Pella.
Hello.
Daryl Loomis.
Hi.
And Eric Asterslager.
Hey there.
And that's the four that you will have to contend with on this merry Friday. So let's get right into it. We haven't heard from you, Jason, in a while. So why don't you give us some updates on whatever you feel like.
Well, I've actually... It's been kind of a media-free past couple of months, just with a lot of stuff happening in my life. But I did see Guardians of the Galaxy in the theater, which was really fun. And it was actually the first 3D movie I've ever seen, too, which was actually a good experience.
So for those of you seen it compared to others in 3D, how does it fare? Or have anybody?
Well, Jason can't answer that question. Already settled. And I didn't see it in 3D because I despise 3D. So, sorry, I got it for you, Daryl.
All right.
I will tell you...
I despise 3D, too.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of... I'm actually trying to think of, like, a 3D... Like, stuff I've seen in 3D that I've liked. Honestly, what's... I'm going to say...
Prometheus was good.
My best... Beowulf. The animated Beowulf in 3D.
Oh, okay.
That was probably my best experience. It was an IMAX, for one, and the glasses were really comfortable. They sat in my face real nice. And I think that was built for 3D. The other stuff, like I think I saw Transformers in 3D, which was a headache. Avengers I saw in 3D, which was a pretty big headache too. So, yeah. Sorry, digression.
Yeah, like,
go ahead.
No, that's okay. And I can't compare. And from stuff I've read, a lot of people said Guardians actually stacked up pretty well against the other Marvel movies as far as 3D goes. That said, I definitely really want to see it in 2D because I mean... This was my first 3D movie for a reason. I really had no desire to see it, but that just happened to be the screening we caught, and it worked. But just skipping ahead to some recent stuff, since this is really the only thing I've been watching recently, is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I've been playing catch-up on the past couple episodes, and to counter what Max said in an episode or two ago, I've actually really enjoyed the second season, and I kind of like that it's shying away from a lot of the straight-up superhero stuff that's in the movies. Because I look at it more as a Joss Whedon TV show, I guess, than a Marvel Universe show. And it's scratching my itch.
Good.
Now, I've never watched any of the any episodes of the show. Do you think I could jump in with Season 2, which I've heard is better than Season 1?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a serialized show, but a lot of the episodes are standalone enough that you can jump in, and they do a lot of expository dialogue to catch up, like, new viewers each episode, so you shouldn't have a problem. But it's kind of like, let's say it's you won't really be using your brain too much on the show, but you should be fine.
Now, keep in mind, I have not decided to actually watch the show, but if I decided that I wanted to.
If, yeah.
I wanted to make sure I didn't have to go back to the beginning of the whole thing.
Yeah, you would be fine if you decided to watch it.
Okay.
So that's about it for me.
All right. Very good. You do have a lecture you're preparing for, you said.
Oh,
right?
This is true. I do.
What are we lecturing about?
We're lecturing about purpose in reading literature. So, with that.
That's...
I can do this lecture for you in one word, man. None.
Not wow.
That's right. Oh,
there we go.
The nihilism of this boy.
I'll pop my head into the classroom and just turn the light off and say, "You're done."
Yeah. Well, you could play 7 Up. Kids like that.
Kids do like that.
It's true. Kids like that these days.
Yeah, excellent. All right, Daryl, go ahead.
Well, I was hoping to finally give you a report on the Raid 2.
Yes.
But I'm only about 30 minutes into it because I couldn't get away from work today. So.
Oh, yeah, there's lots more to go. So.
Yeah, so next time I should have a full disclosure on the Raid 2, so that's fun. But in the meantime, this past week, I don't think it hasn't come out on the site yet, but I reviewed, tend to be really, really, tend to seek out foreign horror a lot. Just because I like the perspectives, whatever. I saw a Colombian horror movie this past week called The Squad that I highly recommend. If you guys can think of anything that's similar to this, I'm really curious to hear it. But it's basically a straight-up cross between a war movie and a horror movie.
Horror?
Warrer,
right? Is that the...
Warrer,
yeah. Warrer, sure. A squad at this remote... base goes radio silent. So this other squad is shipped out to get him or to see what's going on. And they find everybody dead, and this woman who never speaks, alone and locked in a room. And it basically works like. Do you remember the sniper scene in Full Metal Jacket?
Yep.
Plays like that. The whole movie plays like that, except it's horror, and they all just turn on them. So they like it's a Beast Within movie, and they all sort of turn in on themselves.
So is
and,
it an actual horror movie, or is it like use horror elements?
No, it's straight up horror. Yeah. It's I would call it more a horror movie than a war movie. It just takes war movie trappings and places them in that genre, and it works really, really well. So you get all the tension that you get in a war movie, plus the promise of like horrific business. So
I've seen a load of terrible like Nazi, you know, Nazi ghost zombie.
Yeah,
horror
that's
movies.
Not so much what I mean more like, you know, I mean a real genre cross. Like there's one I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it's about a Vietnam vet that comes home, but he's dead, and he's like kills a bunch of people. But that's like a post-war sort of zombie thing. It's different. It's different. I've never really seen anything quite like this.
All right.
Highly recommended.
Cool. Good. All right, Eric. Did you get out to see 2001?
Oh, me? Yes, I did. I'm glad I saw it on the big screen. I like it. It's a very beautiful movie. It's a very poetic movie. It's a very long movie.
It's
a very long movie.
It is. I mean, I'm glad I saw it that way. It's been a very, very, very long time since I've seen it all the way through. I think that, you know, Kubrick does a lot of really interesting visual things and thematic things and idea things. I'm not going to rush out and see it again anytime soon. But it was enjoyable. That was a good one to see on the big screen. And then next week is The Exorcist, which will be...
Excellent. Did you ever find out whether it was the version you've never seen or the version you have seen?
I was going to ask on the way out of the theater last week, but I was a little zoned out, so I didn't... I figured I'll just... It'll be a surprise.
You just had to sit with 2001 for 3 hours. That's not a lot to...
Yeah, you know, IMDb pegged it at 2 hours and 40 minutes. I was out of there in 2 hours and 20, so I don't know...
Okay.
I mean,
it's been a long time since I've watched
that a black hole of some sort opened up and there was a time displacement. It's possible. It felt that way at times. But I don't know. We'll see.
What do you think what's the over-under on the year that someone last uttered the phrase, I'm not going to run out and see 2001 Space Odyssey again anytime soon?
1968 was it?
That's probably.
It is fascinating. I mean, there are things about Kubrick's view of the future, and maybe Arthur C. Clarke's view of the future that's really interesting. Like, it's very detailed, and like the actual process of how everything works is interesting to watch. He films it all, in great detail. But it's like this future where. It's like it's the alternate future where Don Draper wasn't assassinated before he became head of NASA or something. You know, it's like everything. It's like this world. There's still stewardesses and there's still Pan Am and there's still but still there's this patriarchal society where it's all, hey, sweetheart, give me a food packet or something. But I can't wait to see how antiquated our current versions of the sci-fi future look. To future.
We tend, it seems, to go a little farther in the future these days than they used to.
Yeah. Which, I mean, 2001, for instance.
Right, 2001's like 40 years. You're clearly going to get there. I think people are trying more to avoid that these days because it's clearly ridiculous if you place it there. People are going to...
I also like it when movies do kind of like a near future thing, like Spike Jonze's Her is interesting because it's just within our grasp that we can kind of you can draw on what's currently happening.
Twist. But if you go, when you look at all the old like popular science magazines of like 50 years in the future kind of garbage. I mean, it's all, they basically just decided the Jetsons were right and ran with it.
I thought Predator 2 had a pretty good vision of 1997.
It did. It wasn't bad.
you know, picking up on, because you know, it was nice to see Daryl continuing our new segment. I haven't finished watching that yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, promising is right too. I will very quickly wrap up our discussion of Edge of Tomorrow from a couple weeks ago. I did finish watching
it. That's true. That's right. We had that.
And I actually reviewed it. Reviewed it on site. And I know when I got to the ending, it sounded like you had issues with the ending, and so I wanted to see what it was. And I can see why you might leave you a little cold. It's definitely a happy ending.
I don't think it didn't bother me if it was happy or not. It just didn't. For something that built a, you know, obviously with all the caveats being the science fiction fantasy blockbuster, I understand. But it built a mythology. It built some rules, right? You know,
yeah.
And I mean, I had read some articles about it that they were filming this movie without a finished script, for one thing. So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
So they really didn't have a finished script, which kind of makes sense a little bit because I guess, you know, the ending kind of came together sort of haphazardly, but I think that's even strongly put in, because I really did like the movie a great deal.
I think that's fair. Like, I think that, you know, the last couple minutes are a bit of a head scratcher. It doesn't ruin anything that came before it. It doesn't really take, you know, knock the movie down in my estimation at all. It was one of those things like, oh, okay, I guess you're going to do that for some reason. And I appreciate, you know, at least you get to see the aftermath of what they accomplish without just kind of, otherwise what do you do? Cut the black and then you then.
Well, I don't have an answer for that.
Then you have the ending of the first season of 24 where it's just like,
oh, yeah.
Well, what happens next? We can't show you because we set up this very strict schedule.
Well, again, I think it just kind of points to the flux of the script, and it's probably more a testament to how they pulled out a really good movie, considering the tenuousness. So, yeah, I think it was just maybe I liked it so much, I just kind of wish they stuck that landing. You know, I mean, it was a good ending.
Yeah.
But just, you know, just as I thought about it, just didn't quite measure up, but if it stuck a landing, I would have been that much more pumped, you know. I guess that's
I think it's a very, very good example of a kind of movie that we've generally seen before. I mean, it does unique things, and it's super well done and really compelling. But I mean, it's not necessarily breaking a ton of new ground. So the fact that it kind of went for an ending that would kind of, you know, feel like a summer blockbuster Hollywood ending in some ways, just. In the way it wraps everything up nicely and neatly, I'm okay. It didn't spoil it for me at all. But I have closed the book on that one. We can, you know,
all right,
knock that off.
Good. So
there's one more thing I was going to talk about.
Oh, but wow! All right.
I think you're going to talk about it. So I will wait.
Okay. So I want to tell. So I rewatched Willow. No, actually, I'm just joking. All
right. you know, Dave. I actually, this is an aside. I did not mention the last episode. I should have. I went to a library book sale recently.
Yes.
It was the last day they were having a bag sale.
Yes.
And I picked up the novelization of Willow.
Oh, I got that too. I got that from a library book sale. And it's in great condition, actually.
Well, mine's not in great condition, but I think that's good.
You know, it's like the never-ending story. You know, you could dig in there with everyone else, but. Mine's like almost a gem mint 5, so I might not even crack it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So let's see. For movies, I went to see a little something called The Equalizer. So, Daryl, talking about like horror elements meeting other genres, right? This was like an action suspense movie with strong horror elements in it. Like,
okay.
So this is Denzel Washington. This is, you know, Equalizer was an 80s hour-long drama. Retired intelligence officer is kind of a sort of vigilante, just kind of helps people out. So Denzel plays this character, and essentially he plays this really nice, decent guy. He gets sucked into, as we all would, into the Russian mob, right? So basically, it's Denzel versus the Russian mob, and, you know, I won't get spoiler here, but the huge chunk of the film where he takes on the bad guys happens in a Home Depot-like big box store, and he just systematically wipes out these guys in increasingly a unique home improvement-y fashion, like to the point where he will take out a guy and he will leave his high-powered assault rifle with a night scope and instead opt to hang a guy with barbed wire attached to cement. That's pretty much what it is. And it's just like, because he's just such a badass, it's unfair if he's got weapons. So, but me and my dad went to see it in a not two-pack theater, but there were like five, like 80-year-old women sitting there in front of us for some reason, like hoping for the Equalizer. I guess it's the Denzel effect, but they didn't leave, so they got a kick out of it as well.
Maybe they were big fans of the show.
Maybe. That's a good point.
The show Home Improvement you're talking about?
Home Improvement, yes.
Yes, Bob Bueller, of course.
Yeah. That Bob Bueller cameo was a little weird, but beyond that.
He gave great advice.
But there was a... so they're like... I mean, it was dark, and it was like really just... Like, you could have swapped Denzel's character out for, you know, European Psycho number two, you know, as he's just taken out. And
Thriller killer.
Yeah, I mean, literally, he uses a power drill on a guy. So that's what... So, anyway. But good times with the Equalizer. TV, let's see, what have we been up to? I watched a couple new TV shows. I've been nonplussed from a lot of the offerings of new stuff, but my wife and I watched, got to do a shout-out to State alum. Ken Marino has a new show out called Marry Me. You guys familiar with that?
Oh, yeah. I watched that last night.
You did?
Is that Casey Wilson?
Yeah. Is that who it is? Okay. So, I mean, it's, you know, we laughed. It's pretty, it's like designed to be clever. Like, people, these aren't real people, you know.
The trailer felt like Mad About You.
It's not that annoying. It's not like that hip and annoying.
I like Casey Wilson. I liked her time on Saturday Night Live. So, and I like her. But it felt a little too much like Mad About You for me to want to give it a chance.
It's not that cutesy, shticky, but it's definitely like designed. Like the dialogue, you know, no one speaks like that. But it's, you know, we laughed. It was pretty fun. And Ken Marino, I support wholeheartedly. So, I mean, I don't know. If I'll tune in regularly, my wife seemed to get a kick out of it, so we'll see what happens. But then the show, I've been really kind of surprised. Not surprised, because I heard good things about it, but The Flash has been doing pretty well in the CW, and I've talked about Arrow and how I like what DC has been doing. I think The Flash has really kind of done well. It's two episodes in. It's got a great tone, a great feel. The effects are good. The characters, for the most part, are pretty good. There's still a couple CWE type of characters, and I'm stealing that from a review I had read. Like, you know, like the girl, the love interest, the unrequited love interest who is hunting the mask, the vigilante, but the Flash can't really reveal. So that's kind of annoying. But overall, it's been a really – I think the show's been strong, and I like the direction they're going in. They take care of the origin story in the Arrow pilot last year, and they just – you know, do 10 minutes of it in the first show, and they're off and running, so to speak. So it was, I don't know, it's The Flash. I'd like to hear what Mac thought. Did you guys check it out? Any of you guys check
it out? This is actually the other thing I thought you would talk about that I was going to talk about.
Okay.
I've been very kind of not that interested in watching superhero TV shows recently. Like, I've never seen an episode of Arrow, and I've heard good things about it. It just kind of seems daunting to want to jump in, especially when I heard it start off slow. Although now I actually have a point of reference of who Arrow is,
Right.
Shows up in the pilot for Flash. I really liked it. It took me a couple of false starts to kind of just start watching the first episode. I think the tone is great. It kind of it's interesting that it has a bit of a Heroes vibe, just in the sense that, you know, you had this event where all of a sudden created all these, you know, people with superpowers.
Right. And that was also Smallville. I mean, that was Smallville 30 years, you know, whatever, 10, 12 years ago.
I don't know. I mean, other shows have done it. I mean, Misfits did it as well.
Yeah.
So it's got kind of those elements to it. It reminds me a little bit of Buffy in some ways, with, like, the, you know, the team kind of, you know, dealing with the, instead of the monster of the week, you got sort of like the villain of the week.
Yeah.
I think it's, I like The Flash as a character. I think the fact that I know him enough to kind of have a bit of a stake in it, but not so much that I, you know what to expect, you know, all the time. And so one of the reasons why I haven't gone back to any more episodes of Gotham is that I feel like, well, I know where all these characters are going. There's nothing kind of surprising here for me.
Yeah.
Whereas with The Flash, I feel like they can, you know, they can dredge up really obscure, you know, DC villains. Like, I think the second episode, you know, brought in someone that I'd never heard of before, apparently, you know, is a villain in a line of comics that I never read.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. They can just kind of throw in these, like, Easter eggs. And
and they're going to be generous. I think, like I said, with Arrow, DC is pretty generous with its properties. Now, I don't know, Jason, from what I heard, a lot of the gripes about S.H.I.E.L.D. is they hold a lot of their Marvel properties closer to their chest, or they just dole out
really
obscure people. You know, like, I mean, Arrow's giving you a bunch of stuff. I mean, Flash had the Easter egg for Gorilla Grodd, which, again, ridiculous character. But if he shows up, I think that's good for superhero TV. So give me a hyper-intelligent talking ape, right? Who's the Flash's villain, which is crazy.
They did a decent job of making Weather Wizard kind of interesting.
Yeah, right.
They made up without actually calling him name, which is the most ridiculous thing about the character, is that his name.
I mean, even like, and we know Reverse Flash. I mean, talk about a ridiculous character name, but we know he's in it. In fact, I saw some set photos where he's somewhere. So.
If I knew anything about Flash, I'd probably know who Reverse Flash is.
Right, I don't know anything either.
Is Reverse Flash just really slow? Because that doesn't sound good.
Yes. I mean, it seems like he's just kind of like the Yellow Lantern or something. He's just which is something that I generally hate in superhero comics. Is like, let's make the villain the exact opposite of the hero, and people do that all the time. Marvel does it like crazy. DC does it all the time too. But I'm in. I mean, I want to see what happens. They have some interesting, you know, tidbits with the mythology and what some of the characters want, and you know, who did what mystery.
Time travel.
It's going to be interesting. I've heard it ties into some of the Flashpoint stuff.
Okay.
Flashpoint Paradox, which is a storyline I'm not familiar with. So.
And definitely the Crisis storyline. I mean.
So
I would say stuff that's jumped out. Like I think Grant Gustin, who plays the Flash, I think he does a really good job in a role that could easily be just super corny, but he just brings the right tenor to it. I think, and with Jesse L. Martin plays as the detective quasi dad. I think. Their relationship is like genuinely interesting. I like the relationship with his dad, John Wesley Shipp, old school Flash from the 90s.
Oh, that's right. That's who that is.
Yeah, so a good shout out to him. But that works. Like this stuff that does the Iris character will have to grow on me. That's what I was referring to as CWE type. The two nerds in Star Labs. You know, they need to flesh out a bit more than their one dimensional thing, but. Tom Cavanaugh's guy there, Dr. Wells, is more than enough to compensate. I think he's really interesting. So the core is there, and the energy to me is like there, and the effects are like legitimately decent. I think they're not corny. So
they found a really nice balance. I mean, there are even moments in it that kind of remind me a bit of some of the Raimi Spider-Man films.
That's a good call.
I mean, it really is. It takes itself seriously enough, but not too seriously. It seems like there's plenty of room for it to build the character and build the world.
Yeah.
Without feeling like they're gonna have to, either jump ahead to something really big or just get to a point and then have to spin their wheels. For a long time, so
I think that's a good observation. I'm with you. I like obviously we know the Flash, but I know Jack about any. Like I didn't know he healed a lot.
I didn't know that either.
Right. So like to me, this I'm with you. Like I'm actually interested in learning more about his ridiculous rogues gallery and all that stuff. So I'm glad you like it. It's definitely worth checking out, guys. If that's up your alley, but we've squatted enough time. Let's see anything we got coming up for the site real quick. Jason, you got anything cooking?
Yeah, I have a NBC had a show, I think it was earlier this year, that kind of came and went and nobody really noticed it, called Crossbones.
What's John Malkovich?
John Malkovich, and he plays Blackbeard, and it's the premise is he didn't actually die. He's really creating this hippie commune somewhere in near Cuba. And it's, for a show that has John Malkovich and pirates, you think this would be a really good show, especially when the guy who created the show Luther was one of the main writers. It is a really boring, boring, boring show. Basically just characters talking at each other for 45 minutes, and then maybe every other episode somebody swings a sword at some point. But it's really terrible. Unless you want to see John Malkovich doing a Werner Herzog impersonation, because that's how he's playing Blackbeard. other than that, skip it.
All right. Okay, Daryl?
Well, nothing that I can really speak much to, but I have two things that I will talk briefly about coming up for the site. The first, which I want to speak about as little as possible, at least until I actually watch it, is an often cited video nasty that is now arriving on Blu-ray in the German Necromantic, if any of you have seen this little fun piece of work.
I missed that one.
Oh, did you? There's a sequel as well. The director, as far as I know, made three movies. His name is Jörg Buttergeist, something like that. Necromantic and Necromantic 2, and then a really nasty one called Schramm. Now, Necromantic is actually really funny and ridiculous, but I haven't seen it in years, so... I'm going to pass on saying anything about that. The other one, which I'm actually really interested in, is a new, And I'm not the biggest fan of found footage horror, but a new found footage horror movie coming out called The Taking of Deborah Logan that has an interesting premise in which a PhD student is doing a thesis on Alzheimer's disease. And she finds this candidate, this woman with Alzheimer's and her daughter, and they're going to film all of her moments. Well, as they go to the doctor and all that stuff, it becomes clearer and clearer, apparently, that she is possessed by something and doesn't have Alzheimer's at all. Hmm. And so it goes down that path. Don't know anything else. Looking forward to seeing it. The cover's really spooky. We'll see.
All right. Eric?
Very quick shout out to an ABC show called The Goldbergs. I reviewed season one. It should be hitting soon. I like that show a lot. I missed it largely when it was on. It's got Wendy McClendon
Covey, yeah, from Reno 911.
McClendon Covey, yeah. Used to be on Reno 911. Jeff Garland, they're the parents.
Right.
It's based on the recollections of a TV writer named Adam Goldberg. It's kind of about his experiences growing up in the 80s. Kind of a bit of a Wonder Years vibe.
Huh.
Very, very funny. I liked it.
All right.
The big thing I'm reviewing this week is Pee-wee's Playhouse, the complete series on Blu-ray.
Nice.
Which is really awesome.
It demands a Blu-ray.
It actually does. I mean, it was shot, I guess it was shot on film originally. They went and they got it's one of those instances where it's literally never looked as good as it does now. I mean, it used to air it on TV, you know, little boxy TVs in the 80s, and then it was available on DVD and VHS. Like, you've never seen it like this. DVDberg.com. It looks great. It looks great. I mean, they're super sharp, super colorful. It's all 45 episodes. I've been showing them to my daughter, and she is obsessed with Pee-wee now as well. Every day we have to have our secret words and all that kind of stuff.
It is a bizarre show.
It is. It really understands the way kids think and the way kids play, and it kind of gets at something very basic. And it's really creative. I mean, the animation alone is, you know, is so kind of inventive. But, you know, at a time when Saturday morning TV could be just kind of the laziest stuff that we all loved. But
I think one of the real geniuses behind the show was that Paul Rubens took that character, which was an adult stand-up act,
right,
and made it and uniquely moved it into a kids' TV show, never mentioning that Cherry's just a molesty chair.
For example,
it's never mentioned.
No. And even now, like going back and watching it, there. It's, you know, CBS Saturday morning, they didn't throw in a ton of this stuff. There are the occasional innuendo here.
There's innuendo in there, and I find that really interesting.
That's interesting. I mean, but anyway, the set's great. There's like, I think like 4+ hours of interviews and retrospectives and featurettes.
Wow.
Sadly, as far as I can tell, except for one audio commentary, Paul Rubens was not involved in any of the bonus features.
Really?
And I'm not. I need to do some research because I feel like the commentary may have been ported over from another set because it's on the Christmas special, which came out in season three, so it may have been from a previous release. I have to check because he's not in any of the interviews, which is kind of crazy. But even without his input, which is, you know, disappointing, you know, everyone else who's involved has a lot of interesting things to say, and there's a lot of, you know, archival stuff they share. It's a really cool set so far. So I got to keep digging, but
nice.
Enjoying that one.
Excellent. Okay, to do a quick, also do a Blu-ray TV review. Penny Dreadful. You guys hear this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You watch it and you guys see it? Or I had a little bit as well, but I knew very little going in.
Yeah, so I saw the first episode.
Oh, you did? I think, yeah, was it like on, was it free on?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed it quite more than I thought I would. It was, no really clue what I was expecting, so every episode was kind of a surprise. But basically, you know, they're taking some classic, you know, literary characters like Frankenstein, Dorian Gray, blending them into some, you know, some new creations and setting it in, you know, Victorian England and London and all kinds of supernatural craziness. So it's just really well done, high production values everywhere. It's like 8 episodes long. I mean, full-on supernatural kind of gothic horror type of stuff, demon possession, vampires, the whole ball of wax. And it's nice that they kind of go... For some reason, I just liked that they went like that. Like, it wasn't any kind of, like, I don't know, these vampires are just coked up, you know, they're high in opium or something. These were, you know, these were like actual legit, it's just a legit supernatural horror show, which I enjoyed a lot. So I'm not sure if it's right up your extreme alley, Daryl, but I think it definitely feels, you know, like they're embracing its roots. So
yeah, I had a look.
You might get a kick out of that.
Yeah, I had a look at your review, and it sounds like something I could sink my teeth into, as it were.
Right.
But
even if it was just like, you can tell, like the guy who put it together just has an appreciation for this stuff. So it's not like he's subverting it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just, I don't know. It's like an homage, but it's original. It really worked for me, and I just love the. It was just really well done. I think that's what jumps out at me. Maybe it's my Timothy Dalton bias getting in the way too. Right?
That's fair.
Because he's in it and he just delivers as usual. So, I mean, what are you going to say? So, I don't know. So definitely worth tracking down if you can. And I will say Eva Green, I don't think I've ever seen an actress go through as much like honestly, like physical abuse that she must have gone through. There's a whole flashback of her character. And she's, like, in a sanitarium and all this stuff and, like, getting hosed down. And she gets possessed several times. And it's pretty, like, no one's ever rolled their eyes back in their head more than Eva Green in the show. So put it through that way. So, but, yeah, I would definitely recommend it. It was a pleasant surprise for sure. Okay, let's move on. I didn't check to see if we have any updated releases to take a look at. Anybody see that by any chance?
Yeah, let's see.
There's nothing up there.
There's nothing up there? All right. So we're not gonna throw our Chief Justice on the bus. So let's go right to our ambush topics, and we know how this works. So let's just get right to it. Jason, we haven't heard from you in a while, so we'll let you kick it off.
Okay, Deadly Lawn and Garden. So movies where people use lawn and garden tools to kill people.
All right, I'm gonna go to this one before Dave takes it. The lawnmower scene in Dead Alive.
That is a classic.
That's a classic. Classic. That's
yep.
The one that came to mind immediately.
There's a lot in there, absolutely. And I'm glad you took it. I'll actually go with The Equalizer because
there you go.
Denzel Washington runs through the home and garden. he takes one of the tree cutting, those tree cutting implements. He rams that through some dude's face. So that's something. So he does a lot with a little there.
I'm gonna go with something that's not quite lawn and garden, but is definitely home improvement.
All right.
In one of my favorite little nasty movies, starring Cameron Mitchell, the Nail Gun Massacre.
Oh.
He actually uses a lot more tools than just a nail gun. So there's probably some lawn and garden business thrown into that.
Okay, so. So this reminds me of a movie I've talked about before and reviewed a long time ago called The Jackhammer Massacre. So my biggest issue with The Jackhammer Massacre was this guy was chasing around killing people with a jackhammer that was obviously, you know, an industrial-strength power tool plugged into some outlet. And, you know, he had this, like, radius, but people could never avoid him. And he must have had the longest extension cord ever. Isn't a nail gun? I don't know. Nail gun is portable, right?
Yeah. Well, a nail gun should be pneumatic.
A pneumatic, like should, right? Yeah, yeah.
You know, and with the jackhammer, one would expect it to be gas powered.
No, it was plugged in. I mean, he was trailing a cord behind him for sure.
Really?
Yes.
So they're just that cheap.
Like he was on the roof trying to kill a guy, and he was still trailing electrical cords. I have no idea.
They just knew somebody with an electrical jackhammer and wouldn't pay rent a gas powered one.
Yeah,
That's pathetic.
That's true. That was the only flaw in that movie I could find, too.
It sounds it's probably a flawless movie.
To be fair, Dave, there are outlets everywhere.
That's really, true. They're everywhere.
Again, almost. And if you're murdering people with jackhammers, you're not worried about using other people's electricity.
That's right.
I'm guessing.
That's true. And the killer's name was Jack, actually, too, by the way.
Okay.
How cool is that? So cool.
Well, his last name is Screwdriver, so kind of screwed both.
Yeah, really playing with expectations.
All right. Jason, did we get to yours in all this?
No, not yet. I'm going to go with the classic Commando, John Matrix hides out in the gardening shed and then kills people with the saw blades.
Saw blades, yeah.
It's classic.
It is a classic. Commando's great. All right, good. Thank you. Daryl, go.
foreign characters from a fake land.
Well, I'm going to have to jump in with the classic.
I know what you're going to say, but do it. I want to see if I can guess it. Go.
Okay. This is always my favorite foreign, fake foreign country, but pretty much every character in Gymkhata.
Oh, good. Nice.
Parmistan.
Oh, good. You know, that's not what I was thinking. Oh, yeah, Parmistan. That's the superior one. You win anyway, but yeah, Parmistan, somewhere on the Caspian Sea, right? Like, that's all we know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Parmistan is in the perfect place for to put a Star Wars early response system, right?
It's true. It's true.
For some reason, the geography just meant Parmistan. Well, the one, for some reason, I don't know why I thought you were going to go for this, but I'm going to jump in with Belky from Meepos.
That's what I thought he was going to do. Absolutely. That's what I was going to do. So I don't think of something else.
I don't know if that's, yeah, for some reason that I was feeling that. But yeah, Belky from Meepos for sure.
Hmm. Now I've got to come up with something better than Belky.
And Parmistan.
And Parmistan.
Luckily, I've got two in the can.
Lucky you, Daryl.
Lucky me.
Why don't you go, Daryl, and then I'll try to think of...
All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and go with Laka Gravas from Andy Kaufman from Taxi.
What was his country?
Oh, yeah.
His country was... oh, gosh. I'm blanking on it. It's...
It was indeed falsified?
It was never disclosed.
Oh, okay.
Apparently. And his native language is gibberish.
Oh, all right.
Huh.
Well, Eric, you have, like, a lot of, you know, a lot of 24 terrorists from unnamed Islamic states, you know.
That's true. I wish I could think of a specific name, however.
No, I don't think they are. They went out of their way to avoid naming them, so I don't think you'll never find them.
They name them, they must have come up with some... They came up with fake names, didn't they? Are there?
I don't know. I just remember all these CTU, like, hologram maps were weirdly devoid of any kind of, you know, nomenclature. So I have nothing for you on that.
Oh, I don't know. Okay, let's see what's the name, fake country name, Germany. That's a fake name.
That's super fake. Or East Germany. I mean,
that's, what is that?
Who's ever heard of that?
North Germany.
I just looked up and found one of the fake countries from 24.
Oh, what do you got? We'll count.
Get ready, yeah. Kamistan.
Oh, right.
That's good. That's good.
But, did the Sum of All Fears, the Ben Affleck movie, replace? Because they replaced an Islamic terrorist with like neo Nazis or something. They use a fake kind of Euro trash country.
I don't remember.
Because there's a little something about that. So. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we'll take.
Apparently,
you got something cooking. Eric.
Well, and I'm on Wikipedia now. Yeah. Apparently, the West Wing had a country called Kumar, so that was
all right. Good.
There you go. That's something.
That's
there.
You
go.
Very nice.
That's terrible.
All right. Well, Eric, I'll let you rebound right now with your.
All right. There we go. All right. Crazy death scenes. I'm sure we've probably done some variants of this every single episode, but come
maybe
on.
We did some just now, actually. So let's see.
I know. It's
crazy death scenes. All right.
Crazier. Or how about we could say death scenes, you know, death in ways you've never seen done in a movie before. Or crazy. Either way, something, you know, it blew your mind.
Gotcha.
All right. So it's possible that I've talked about this particular death scene before. On this show, but I don't think so. I'm going to go with a particular scene in The Toxic Avenger.
All right.
In which a post-transformed Toxie meets up with the little old lady who was really, really mean to him before he was turned in a laundromat. And so takes her, folds her in half, and puts her in the dryer and turns it on and kills her that way.
Gotcha. Something
nice.
Death by tumble. Dry.
Not bad. It's not too bad.
She was warm.
She was warm, but at the end. Not everybody can say that.
I'm tempted to throw in some kind of a deathbed reference just to annoy
No. Oh, God. Bed that eats.
This one's probably... I guess this is a lazy one, but every time I think of a weird death scene, I always go to the Big Trouble in Little China. One of the Furies near the end gets... I'm trying to even remember. I don't even remember the context of it, but he gets blown up. Like, he gets inflated to the point that he just explodes.
Zero context. That never, like, That doesn't make, that made zero sense, but it's any like it's confetti and stuff that pops.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's great, but yeah, it didn't make any sense at the time. Okay, I'm gonna go with one that I still remember. So like King Kong Lives. I've talked about this before. The Lyndall Hamilton pseudo King Kong sequel, where they give King Kong a artificial heart. Right? Have we talked about this before?
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite. Like, it's a legitimately great B movie. Like a great B movie. Just for the scene of Linda Hamilton performing open heart surgery on King Kong by using a little robot like buzzsaw is worth seeing anyway. But anyway, King Kong wakes up, goes nuts when everyone starts to attack him. Meanwhile, he's got like a Lady Kong who's pregnant with his baby out there somewhere, so he really wants to get back to her. So there's a scene where some hunters are trying to bag King Kong and they like start a rock slide in this canyon. They bury him and then they start like throwing things at his face and taunting him. So King Kong blasts out of the rocks. He takes, and he kills both hunters. Like, he takes one and just shoves him in his mouth. Like, just, like, you know, shoves him in his mouth and takes out his boot. Then he takes another guy and breaks him in half, which was pretty jarring. I mean, the movie's PG, you know? So, there you go. I would say King Kong, like, he lost a little bit of, I don't know about sympathy because the hunters were jerks, but That was kind of rough, you know. Like, that's not the King Kong I know, I suppose. A murderous fiend. So.
You would have just given him a warning. The King Kong you know.
That's right. I mean, he was stomping and eating people. Yeah, you know, the original one, I understand, but I guess it was just a break in the guy in half. That was
right,
rough.
Right.
That was rough. Yeah.
Right.
All right, that's mine.
All right, to me.
I think we're to you.
All right. So, it being October, I've been watching, you know, a lot of scary movies, and which usually, you know, when you watch them in bulk, you tend to come across ones you've never seen before, maybe some ones that, you know, aren't as great, but this is one that I had heard of but never seen, the movie Monkey Shines, which is directed by George Romero.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a movie about a guy who gets paralyzed from the neck down. He gets a helper monkey who has been injected with some secret serum that makes it super smart but also murderous in the telepathic way, and he kind of begins to kill off people and stuff. But
it's like child's play with a monkey.
Kind of like child's play with a monkey, and instead of the little boy, it's a quadriplegic in a wheelchair. But it's the weirdest death scene of the villain that I've ever seen in a horror movie, and I was, you know, which was saying something. I've never seen a quadriplegic man bite a monkey and whip it back and forth until it dies. How the movie ends, it's so...
It's all a man can do when you...
He's using what he has, but it's insane. That's just such a crazy visual on so many levels.
Okay, so then you just saw this because I actually... The part of Monkey Shines that is super memorable to me is the beginning, sure, for some reason. So you can clarify this with me because there's a part I understand. So the guy, the reason he gets paralyzed is because he likes to go running with bricks in a backpack. Okay?
Yeah, that's
is that
right.
Yeah. And bear with me because it's been like 25 years since I've seen this thing. But does he get hit by a car to make the bricks come out of the backpack?
Yeah, he gets hit by a truck. He is sort of one. He's lunged at by a dog, and then he runs into the street to avoid the dog and right in front of a truck. Yeah.
I can think of like 1,000 more economical ways to have some guy get hit in the head with a brick.
I think it was the truck hitting him that did it, but
because I remember distinctly like a close up of the bricks flying up into the air.
Yeah, well, that's just good filmmaking.
Oh yes, it sure is.
Obviously it's a memorable visual. So.
Well, but to me it implied that they fell on him, and then that's why he was paralyzed.
Well, then you obviously weren't paying very close attention.
That's fair.
No, there are things about that movie that are very confusing, and that is probably the least of them. But there you go.
All right. Okay, and then last one for me. I've been really applying some significant peer pressure on Eric to purchase an Xbox One this holiday season, basically because I don't have any friends right now, so it'd be great. So you guys are welcome to purchase one as well, be my friends. But anyway, cool, awesome tech and gizmos that you saw in movies when you were a kid that you wanted for real.
Well, I had dreams for weeks about the Talk Boy after watching Home Alone 2.
Oh, man, Talk Boy.
Huh.
I don't remember that. I've seen the movie. I just don't remember Talkboy.
Yeah, it was the little like tape recorder thing that he would just go around and record himself and then change the speed so it sounded like, you know, it slowed down his voice so he sounded older, or he would speed it up and make it sound faster. And it was just gratuitous product placement, especially since I don't think the Talkboy...
Oh, yes, I remember the Talkboy, yes. I remember the Talkboy, yes.
But I remember seeing that and I thought, like, this is the greatest device ever. And I never got one, which is probably one of the reasons why I turned out the way I did. So, but yeah, awesome.
Fake bomb. all right, I'm going to go with, I don't remember the name of it, but I'm going to go with the arcade game that the kid played in, The Last Starfighter.
I think it was called, wasn't it called The Last?
I think it was called Last.
It was called The Last Starfighter.
Yeah.
I wanted The Last Starfighter really bad. Yeah. It was rad. It took you to space.
It did take you to space. Like, you're talking about the actual, you would be recruited into an actual interstellar rebel mission.
That was the idea.
That was, okay. So it was,
I mean, that was what the product did,
but it
does, right?
What the product promised, correct. You know. That is correct.
I'm trying to avoid the obvious one, and I'm avoiding that.
I appreciate it.
This is, I got this from the book, although it's been this is a property that's been in every single medium. But the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the actual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
That's true.
Oh, it's pretty cool. Now, of course, I know it's just an iPad, but at the time, right. It seemed like you know.
That's true.
Quick thing.
I'd say, like, for me, I think everyone agrees the hoverboard for sure. And another movie arcade game, which wasn't as cool as The Last Starfighter because you got trapped into it, but it was in the Nightmares movie with Emilio Estevez, The Bishop of Battle. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
You're actually fighting the Bishop of Battle. That's pretty cool. But I would say, like, pretty much anything that Data had in the Goonies, I remember. Just, like, this Slick Shoes in particular would be something that I did some superficial engineering on and came up way short, you know, but like in the little chopper, the Pinchers of Peril and whatnot. So like anything going on with Data, I thought was pretty awesome.
I didn't do anything with the Goonies, but I definitely remember making, like, painting a coffee can and sticking something on it and making a Ghostbusters trap.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Out of it. So like any of that, like, getting the proton pack, ghost, you know, the trap stuff, that was,
I think.
Did it work?
It actually ghost trapped in my 8 o'clock coffee can. That's in the basement.
True. Well, your wall started stopped bleeding, though, right? So that's all that matters.
Finally. I mean, it's okay. I thought that was just mold. But
I'm glad you said that, because I remember, like, I think I had my grandfather, who was a skilled carpenter. He built a trap as well. I remember that. So the trap was pretty awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The trap was pretty cool. All right. That's it. We are done reminiscing. Enough to go on to our, kind of move on to our real lives. So thank you for listening to the Friday Filibuster. Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com is our email. I'm going to put Jason on the spot. You have to come up with, say a witty one-liner as we leave.
Tag.
Go.
All right. That's why you always leave a note.